Hey, welcome to the podcast. Really good one. Mike Lee is with us today. Asked him some questions. I think it was really telling about how Mike was talking about some of the people that are running for Democratic nomination.
I thought that was the most fascinating part of the show because you hear his commentary. I mean, look, I'm reading into it like everybody else.
Yeah.
But you hear the way he talks about certain senators from the Democratic side and certain others. I, myself, personally, I felt like I read into it a little bit.
It's kind of like when your mom and dad came and said, hey, there's somebody you should date. You know, we have this friend and you know, they're like, yes, she's very pretty and blah, blah, blah. But she's... And then them coming to you and say, you should date this. And listen, she has a really sweet spirit. She's very kind.
Right,
she's,
right.
You're like, oh, my gosh, she's horribly ugly. She was in a fire, right? You see if you pick that up with Mike Lee. Also, Biden, it was official. And my NFL draft picks.
This was fascinating to see Glenn try to select what top 10 players would be selected in the NFL draft.
And in today's world, I'd say I did really, really well.
In today's world where criticism is not allowed, yes, you did very, very well.
Or in today's world where up is down and down is up. Yes. All on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Let's get to the big exciting news.
Joe-cella.
Joe-cella is happening.
Mm-hmm.
Woo! It is the Burning Man of politics. There's so much excitement around this.
He is very excited, and he has released the video. Joe Biden is in the race officially. Oh, yeah. We have to move him over on our fancy board over here.
Oh, yeah.
He is in the race.
Really,
he joins as the candidate leading in basically every poll in basically every state. The only place he's not consistently leading is in New Hampshire, which there you have both Elizabeth Warren from next door and you have
Bernie Sanders
from next door. People who live next door to Elizabeth Warren don't like her that much, so she's not close to the top.
Yeah, they're like, we don't want her here. We want her in Washington. Can you just please,
yeah,
please, America, elect her president so she's not here.
And Bernie is doing very well there. But Biden, I think, is second there. He's way ahead in South Carolina. He's way ahead in Nevada. He's,
I think,
right
he
there.
Only has one place to go, though, down.
Yeah, you know, I go back and forth on this. I think
he is a
tougher general election candidate than a great fit for this particular primary. So it's going to be interesting. I think that wing of the party, the very tiny wing, like, you know, every once in a while you get a bucket of wings and there's one like deformed wing
right.
that you could barely.
You're like, I think this is a frog leg.
Yeah. And it doesn't have it's not coated in buffalo sauce. It's coated in like Fruit Loops. And you're like, what happened in the kitchen? That's kind of the size and scope of the moderate wing of the Democratic Party right now.
Mm-hmm.
But if everyone were to align around him, he'd have a chance to get through the primary, and he's certainly the favorite as of this moment.
Yeah, it really depends on whether the Democrats are going to vote like the Republicans voted last time, which was anyone but Hillary Clinton, and this guy will take her out.
Right, and that is, Biden polls better against Donald Trump than every other candidate in the field,
so,
by a decent margin,
right, too. If they are A... And I'm not sure that these are things that we would be able to tell until the very end, because people's rage on the left is so crazy about Donald Trump that they might just say anybody but Donald Trump and this guy could win. And so they won't care about his policies. On the other hand, we'll see how much they do believe. How the core of Democrats believe in, you know, social justice and environmental justice. He's going to say all the right things, but he's not going to look like the reformer. You know, you got to remember, we live in a world now, in a world gone mad. We live in a world where a comedian was just elected president with no policies in Ukraine. Hey, that's a serious country with serious issues, and they just elected a comedian that didn't lay out any policies. So people are just sick of politicians. That's going to hurt Joe Biden. But his scrappiness, his willingness to his willingness to, you know, be a dogfighter is going to help him.
Yeah, he will mix it up. He doesn't mind getting in. He has some Trump sort of qualities, you know, where the left will, you know, sometimes the right even will do this. When Trump says something that's maybe not right or maybe a little offensive or, you know, whatever, there's a good portion of conservatives and Republicans that are like, look, it's Donald Trump. You're like, look at his policies.
Mm-hmm.
With Joe Biden gets that same treatment from the left. And unlike Donald Trump, he also gets it from the media.
Mm-hmm.
So people, when he says the, you know, dumb thing about television being invented in 1492, like it's Joe. Joe just does these things. And it's not, you know, look at the big picture here. He's got these policies.
Hang on just a second. But he doesn't make a lot of those crazy flubs. I mean, there's no way we have audio of him just making ridiculous statements.
Oh, no, I don't think that's possible.
Obama lived in Long Island for 10 years or so. God rest her soul. And your mom's still alive and your dad passed. God bless her soul. Chuck Graham, state senator's here. Chuck, stand up, Chuck. Let him see you. Oh, God love you. What am I talking about?
A man who will be the next president of the United States, Barack America.
In Delaware, the largest growth in population is Indian Americans moving from India. You cannot go to a 7-Eleven or a Dunkin' Donuts unless you have a slight Indian accent. I'm not joking.
We got the first sort of mainstream African American who is articulate and bright and clean and nice looking guy. I mean, that's a storybook.
They're going to put you all back in chains.
All right, here it is. The tape that we've all been waiting for. Here he is, Joe Biden.
Charlottesville, Virginia is home to the author of one of the great documents in human history.
Very exciting.
We know it by heart.
We do.
We hold these truths to be self-evident.
Oh, by the way.
That all men are created equal, endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights.
Okay, stop for a second. Now, this is something we've argued with people over before, and there is a legitimate history. There's a reason to say inalienable. But when you are on the screen, it says unalienable. And he's talking about knowing it by heart. So he's actually, this is a produced video, obviously. He's saying inalienable. And on the screen, it says unalienable, which is what it actually says. But there, I mean,
you can say it either way.
You can say it either way.
Historically speaking, you could say it either way.
Right.
But if you are quoting it and saying you know it by heart, you should have unalienable. I mean, again, because this is not from a speech. This is not, you know, if you were just doing, you're recording this.
Yes.
The one time you can be perfect and not make a flub. You know, somebody can say, cut, Joe, you got to say unalienable because that's what's going to be on the screen. Okay, go ahead, take it.
Yeah, exactly. and like, it's not a huge gaffe. And it's like one of those things where technically it is unalienable. However, I mean, you've done the history of this before, and I can't remember it exactly.
I can't remember it either. It's the same word, inalienable, unalienable. I can't remember
and it was
what.
Said by the founders in both ways at times. And but it's just funny. Because here he is saying he knows it by heart. It's on the screen as the opposite word.
It kind of goes to the idea of, I want this job, but not that much.
Right.
I mean, I'm not going to work that hard.
But you haven't heard the passion that's coming.
Okay. All right.
Listen
ahead.
To the intensity and passion of Joseph Robinette Biden Jr.
We've heard it so often, it's almost a cliche, but it's who we are. We haven't always lived up to these ideals. Jefferson himself didn't. But we have never before walked away from them. Charlottesville is also home to a defining moment for this nation in the last few years. It was there on August of 2017 we saw Klansmen and white supremacists and neo-Nazis come out in the open.
I mean, can we stop for a second? Think of the press we're giving these meaningless zilches of groups like white supremacists. I mean, they give them so much attention as if they're controlling the entire country. There was like 300 people at this event. And yes, they were all horrible. Yes, they were all saying Jews will not replace us and are complete disasters. Remember when they tried to redo the event the next year and no one showed up? Like, is this really? We're launching a presidential campaign. over a bunch of people that are just zilches in our society.
Because people now know that fear is the currency of the day.
Everybody in Washington seems to know it.
Yep.
Maybe with the exception of our guest next half hour, Mike
Lee.
I mean, but that's about it. I mean, there are not a lot of exceptions to that one at this point.
All right, go ahead.
Their crazed faces, illuminated by torches, veins bulging.
That
was the fangs of racism.
Stop a second. At no point do you actually see any veins bulging. Now, I think I get what he's going for. They were angry, but there was not a noticeable vein issue with this particular event,
right?
Was there?
I wasn't checking all of their body parts. If it would have been on their face or on their neck, I think I would have noticed.
Now, but I know maybe that is where Joe usually goes, though. He's usually really close to the neck.
Look at that vein.
Maybe this is just the way he recognizes people. he's either the smell of the hair.
It's not even the smell. He's like, it's more of a, they're not angry. He just has to move their hair. They're not angry. That's what he's looking for.
There we go.
Okay.
More from Joe Biden.
Chanting the same anti-Semitic bile heard across Europe in the 30s.
And heard in the Democratic Party today.
And they were met by a courageous group of Americans. And a violent clash ensued. And a brave young woman lost her life. And that's when we heard the words of the President of the United States that stunned the world and shocked the conscience of this nation. He said there were, quote, some very fine people on both sides. Very fine people on both sides? With those words, the President of the United States assigned a moral equivalence between those spreading hate and those with the courage to stand against it. And in that moment,
so
I knew the threat to this nation was unlike any I had ever seen in my lifetime.
Okay, stop for a second. So this is a guy who was a senator throughout like a good chunk of the Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
But the threat of Donald Trump saying there's very fine people on both sides
is the greatest he's ever seen.
Wow.
That's quite a thing.
He may have poor eyesight.
Yeah.
I think
or bad judgment.
It could be bad judgment.
Maybe bad judgment.
This is a guy, and now of course he says these things all the time. Like when he said getting Osama bin Laden was the most difficult decision in 500 years.
Yeah.
Which is there's been a lot of decisions in that time period. We got a half a millennia here. A lot of people make a lot of tough calls.
It's not like the rest of them were easy.
Right.
You know what I mean?
But I mean, gosh, I don't know. Maybe we should go try to find the biggest terrorist on earth that we've all been trying to find for a decade.
And everybody who's on the side of good and not the side of the evil Allah,
right?
You know, everybody's like, I mean, even Muslims are like, yeah, no, we gotta get him.
Yeah,
that guy.
Absolutely.
Of course, we got to get that guy.
Even a lot of Muslim extremists were like, yeah, he's too far from it. But like, oh, that was a real tough call from the White House somehow. It's hard to imagine. Okay, more Joe Biden?
Yeah.
Okay.
I wrote at the time that we're in the battle for the soul of this nation.
Yes.
Well, that's even more true today. We are in the battle for the soul of this nation.
We are.
I believe history will look back on 4 years of this president and all he embraces as an aberrant moment in time. But if we give Donald Trump 8 years in the White House, he will forever and fundamentally alter the character of this nation.
Stop just a minute. But I thought you were for a fundamental transformation of the United States of America.
You actually campaigned on it, Joe.
Right. That was the deal.
Yeah.
Fundamental transformation of the United States of America.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
One thing you notice here from Joe as well, which separates him from every other candidate in the field, including Sanders, is he's going right after Trump.
Yep.
This is not a, hey, let me tell you about my wonderful vision for the future. This is not necessarily like, let me tell you about some great policy ideas. Let me introduce you.
Really smart.
It's going after Trump head on.
And because that is the thing that will get him the nomination is the guy who can take on Trump.
Yep.
And if he picks the fight and Trump responds to Biden, then it'll be really a lock. If Trump starts to fight him now, it'll be seen by the Democrats as, oh, he's going to take him on. He can take him on. He's got it. It's very smart on Joe Biden's part. But whoa, what a riveting reason to elect Joe Biden.
The best of the Glenn Beck program. Like listening to this podcast? If you're not a subscriber, become one now on iTunes. And while you're there, do us a favor and rate the show.
We are so excited to have the one, the only, Senator Mike Lee with us. Really, truly, Mike, we are honored to have you. You are a guy, I remember the first time we spoke, you were in your car. I think I called you, right?
Yes.
And did you know I was going to call?
I think somebody had told me I might be getting a call from you at some point.
Yeah.
And I was in Provo Canyon in Utah.
And he pulled his car to the side of the road, and we chatted for probably a half an hour. And I asked you some, I think, some pretty tough questions, and right?
Yes. Starting with, are you concerned with the eternal welfare of your soul?
It's an interesting way to open up a conversation.
I think his response
was expecting.
Hang on, I think I need to pull over. but we had a great conversation, and really it was about how convicted are you on the principles, the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States, and could you and your wife handle what you were walking into? Is it better, worse, or about what you expected?
About what I expected, but a little worse in some ways. Mm-hmm. I think I had overestimated the extent to which the American people would rally quickly against the explosive growth of government that was happening at the time. Mm-hmm. And underestimated the difficulty of changing things. But in many respects, it's the same. And yes, my wife, Sharon, was with me. And we had to pull over in part because Provo Canyon has a lot of dead cell phone spots. And in part because I wanted to make sure I could pay full attention to our conversation. There were times when I had to mute it and say, what do you think?
I don't know. Let me ask you this. We just did an expose on Joe Biden. He announced that he was running today. And we did an expose, which comes from a couple of really good investigative reporters. One of them is Peter Schweitzer, and the other one is John Solomon.
From the Hill.
And, they have this thing really locked down. What he and his son and John Kerry's son, they started a fund to be able to, an investment firm. And they started it right after Dad was sworn into office. They don't have any experience. And they went over to the Ukraine. They were doing a deal while Dad was doing a deal with Ukraine. Joe Biden is very proud that he got an investigator fired over there because of corruption. But what people don't talk about is the fact that that investigator was investigating Joe Biden's son on the board of this very corrupt gas company in the Ukraine. He also went over and did a $1.5 billion deal with the Bank of China, his son did, while Joe was meeting with the top ranking officials. He got in. He was they invested in the main kind of their Lockheed Martin of China, which was trying to, in fact, did steal some of our stealth technology. They also invested in a company a nuclear company that was nailed by the FBI while Joe Biden's son was part of the board. Nailed by the FBI for stealing our nuclear secrets. It's such cronyism. Nobody is paying attention to this. And I wondered, and Mike, maybe you can help me out on this. Is that because nobody wants to bring this up because everybody's doing this?
I can't imagine that everyone's doing that. That's a pretty big deal. There are people who don't do $1.5 billion in deals in a whole year.
Yeah, in a whole
lifetime, in an eternity. I can't imagine that that is terribly common, and I can't imagine that that's not going to become an issue with the presidential campaign.
It doesn't seem to be going anywhere, and it's the same kind of thing that, Clinton was doing these shady deals with Gazprom, and it really never went anywhere, and it was all circumstantial evidence. This it's all documented, and I'm sure it's all legal, but he is using the muscle of the United States of America when he was vice president. Peter Schweitzer said he was the most corrupt vice president in all of American history.
Do you suppose that a Republican vice president doing such things would get away with that?
No.
And not have it reported
no.
on extensively?
And John Kerry's son. I mean, when he was Secretary of State and Joe Biden was the vice president and they had all this power, the government of China was giving their sons $1.5 billion to invest.
That's very impressive and very stunning
yeah.
in its significance for our system of government.
So I guess what I'm asking is, in some ways, if we don't turn around, we're probably 1989 Russia, where people in your position, people in Washington, might begin to see the handwriting on the wall and say, you know what, we're not going to turn this ship. I'm already positioning myself for what comes after. And what comes after this is probably a really nasty oligarchy where you've got these people who are just pulling all the strings. Is corruption so bad in Washington that nobody cares about this, or do they not know?
Look, I don't think that Washington is the kind of place where no one cares about this. I suspect it has more to do with them not knowing. I also gather that someone running for president, if he has done this, is going to have that exposed, and that's going to become a problem for him.
Are you concerned, Mike, about the Democrats that are running? Is there anybody? I know you get along with Bernie Sanders.
Oh, sure.
But you don't agree with any of his policies. Do you see anybody on the other side? You don't even have to name a name, but do you see anybody on the other side that you think isn't really dangerous to the Constitutional Republic?
Well, let me put it this way. I see every single Democratic presidential candidate seems to be moving to the left, and they're all moving in lockstep. It's like a one-way leftward turning ratchet.
Uh-huh.
Each time any one of them moves further to the left, they all try to outdo each other.
And it doesn't go the other way.
No, it doesn't go the other way. And the problem is, this is not just a sort of red team versus blue team, team A versus team B sort of a thing. This is a different political ideology. It's a different concept of what government is, what it's for, and what dangers it poses to the American people.
How close are we to turning on the Constitution and Declaration and not being able to reel it back?
You know, I tend to believe, Glenn, that we're always close to that point. I've come to believe that we have been close to that point at every moment since the American Revolution. Freedom and constitutionally limited government, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, the notion of the inherent dignity of the immortal human soul mm-hmm. relative to a big, brooding omnipresence of a government. These are things that are part of human nature. And unless we make a deliberate decision that we're not going to have those things, and unless that decision is remade every day and within every generation, we will always reach that point you described.
But we have not been to a place to where the left, for instance, on the Second Amendment, you've got to watch about 8 fronts on that. They're going through the courts. They're going through the banking system. They're doing all kinds of stuff right now. And any of them could mean the end of the Second Amendment as we know it.
That's right. People trying to punish others for engaging in certain types of businesses. If you transact in firearms, for example, you might find it difficult to get along in the banking world or any other disfavored industry. Anything deemed sufficiently unwoke runs the risk of falling victim to that kind of activity.
Did you see the AOC questioning of the bankers, which she said to the head of Wells Fargo?
No.
Oh, my gosh. You know what? Let me take a break, and then we're going to find that audio, because you have to hear it, where she was basically threatening the banks, saying you're engaging in lending, money to oil companies. we're going to start holding you responsible for any time anything goes wrong and climate change. It's remarkable. Mike Lee, who has just penned a new book that is important for everybody's collection, important to read, but also important to keep. Our Lost Declaration is the name of the book by Senator Mike Lee. He's with us here for probably about another 40 minutes, and then he's going to be on TV with me tonight. Lots to talk to him about. I want to go over this audio from Ocasio-Cortez and what she was saying to the Wells Fargo and other banking executives. Listen.
Mr. Sloan, why was the bank involved in the caging of children and financing the caging of children to begin with?
I don't know how to answer that question because we weren't.
So in finance, you were financing and involved in debt financing of CoreCivic and Geo Group, correct?
For a period of time, we were involved in financing one of the firms. We're not anymore, and the other. I'm not familiar with the specific assertion that you're making, but we weren't directly involved in that.
Okay, so these companies run private detention facilities run by ICE, which is involved in caging children. But I'll move on.
So she goes on to talk about oil spills and climate change, and you're lending money to oil companies, so aren't you responsible? Shouldn't we hold you responsible for climate change damage? Your thoughts?
Well, first of all, she's shaming someone for being the banking intermediary for someone assisting a law enforcement agency.
Correct.
Now, if she wants to disagree with our laws, if she wants to disagree with how they're enforced, she ought to take that up with lawmakers and law enforcement and law enforcers. I don't quite understand why it makes sense to take that up with.
So I'll tell you why. Here it is. He said, for a period of time, we were involved with financing one of the firms. We were not. We're not anymore. So here's the thing. They were, Wells Fargo was featured November 2016 in a report, along with 9 other banks, of lending to CoreCivic and Geo Group, $444 million, blah, blah, blah. The same period of time in which the photo of caged children misattributed to the Trump administration was taken. Wells Fargo and other banks decided to reevaluate their lending activity to private prisons amid the controversy over the Trump administration's immigration policies. So the reason why she's bringing it up is because it's working.
The public shaming.
Yes.
Public shaming of people who dare to provide financing for another company that provides outsourced law enforcement assistance.
You know that
to a
Cuomo,
government agency.
You know that Cuomo is doing that with the banking executives in New York. If you lend money to anybody who is a gun manufacturer or a gun store, we're going to have to send in more investigators because we think those guys are up to shady things. So if you want your approval every year, you want your audit to go smoothly, don't do business with them.
I suppose the good news here is that we're not dealing with the government itself forcing it. We're dealing in some ways with shaming by public officials through private channels and sometimes with a public stage.
I mean, isn't that the same as the brown shirts? It wasn't the government. It was an outside of the government arm.
Yeah. Now, people can still arrange financing from another bank, but what happens when everyone turns against
Correct.
All other banks?
Correct.
Does that mean nobody will be able to enter into a contract to provide support for a law enforcement agency?
Right.
And if that happens, what does that do to our ability to enforce the law? What does that do to President Obama's administration's ability to cage children, as happened?
We are sitting here at a time where people are not abiding by the law. We just had the district attorney here in Dallas say that he is no longer going to prosecute crimes. If you break into somebody's house or their store and you steal something less than $750 and you need it, if you were just stealing it to enrich yourself, he'll prosecute. But if you need it, he won't prosecute. Senator Mike Lee, just an absolute wall around our Constitution. And we are pleased to have him in studio. Hi, Mike.
Great to be with you. Thank you.
So you've written a new book called Our Lost Declaration, which is a really important book, I think, and everybody should have at least one copy, hard copy, to be able to keep, and one to give to your kids or your grandkids. Mike, my understanding of the Declaration of Independence has changed so much. It's gotten, I just love this document. I just love it. And I look at it as it's our mission statement. And everybody says, well, we haven't done those things. Well, no, because they're really hard. That's an aspirational thing that no one had ever said before. And if we had accomplished all those things, it'd be time for a new mission statement.
It would. And this mission statement remains achievable. It remains desirable. But we've drifted from that understanding. Look, our children have been taught a distorted version of history, one that badly misstates the role and the mission of government and the risks associated with its abuse. I wrote this book to help fix that, to give people the ability to help their children and their grandchildren and themselves learn what they wish were being taught in our public schools and what used to be taught in our public schools. This is a companion book to another one I wrote a few years ago about the Constitution. But the more I've researched and read into the Constitution, and it's important, the more I've come to realize you can't fully understand and appreciate and implement the Constitution without understanding the Declaration and where it came from.
It is the Declaration of Independence is the mission statement. We want to start a country, and it's going to be this. And this is why we have to start our own country, because of these problems. But it leads with, this is who we're going to be. The Constitution is the owner's manual. It's how to make that mission statement, or quite frankly, any mission statement, work.
That's right. The Constitution is the picture frame. The Declaration is the picture.
Correct.
It's the vision for where we want to go.
Correct.
It's also the vision for what happens when things go dangerously off course.
So can I ask you a question on the Declaration? It says, and for these purposes, governments are instituted among men. And what the purposes are to protect those rights given by God. And it is the duty, if a government, I'm badly mangling it now, I'm sorry, but if the government goes awry and starts to go against those rights and they're not protecting those rights, it is the right and the duty of the people to alter or abolish and institute a new system that will better serve that purpose, right?
Yeah.
So in the case of the Civil War, that was not what they were trying to do. They were not trying to protect rights. They said they were because they were saying state rights, but they were violating all men are created equal. They were violating the basic human rights. If a government becomes so horrible that it is taking away our rights and it is mangling everything that we've ever stood for, why doesn't a state have the right to say, no, I want to alter or abolish it? And I'm going over here because we believe for our own safety and happiness and the safety of those rights, we can come up with a better way of doing it.
That right exists. I would clarify one thing there. You referred to state. It's not the state itself. A state is another government. It's another layer of government. It's ultimately the people that have it. Governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed.
Okay.
Whenever government becomes destructive of those ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it. To alter or abolish their form of government. And so that recognizes this beautiful language penned by Thomas Jefferson some 2.5 centuries ago, identifies the fact that these laws exist in a state of nature. They exist out there. They are pre-state. They're pre-government.
Mm-hmm.
They exist because we exist and because God created us. And we are the sovereigns. That's what was so revolutionary about this document. And it's that thought, the idea that we have God-given rights, that government is there to serve us and not the other way around. It's considered revolutionary today, sadly, because we've neglected it.
The idea that Jefferson was a mentally tortured man that lived in one foot in slavery, one foot out, I don't think is entirely accurate, especially if you read the first draft. And it was two states. I mean, Hancock said, and I think he was right on this, look, the king is going to divide us. If there's any daylight between any of us 13, he is going to use that, and he's going to flip those people who have any kind of daylight. He will worm his way in, and he will have you working against us. So we have to be in lockstep on everything. So two states said no to Jefferson's proposal in the first draft of abolishing slavery.
That's right. And I talk about this in our Lost Declaration. In researching this, I discovered how much Jefferson really wanted to put language in it, identifying as one of the grievances against King George III that he had perpetuated slavery within the American colonies, doing so perhaps even to destabilize them and to make them dependent on that evil, vile institution. As I researched for this book, I also discovered that Jefferson, early in his career, within the state of Virginia, tried to get the state of Virginia to abolish slavery. Mm-hmm. Now,
later in his career, too.
And
he
later
tried several times.
He tried several times. Now, I acknowledge in the book, he does have a complicated relationship with slavery, because even as he's trying to do all this, he still owns slaves.
But he can't get rid of them because of state law.
He can't. Unlike George Washington, he didn't make arrangements for them to be freed after he and his wife had died.
Not only that, he couldn't because he was in debt. The law stated at the time, if you're in debt at the time of your death, you cannot get rid of that property.
Which is one of the great tragedies of the Jefferson estate, is that because of those very same debts, after he died, his slaves were sold, and in many instances, families were separated and sent to different parts of the country. Mm. So yeah, Jefferson had a complicated relationship with this, but he knew it was wrong. And he did try to do something about it. He even put language in the original draft of the Declaration of Independence to stop it. And so we have to remember that Jefferson himself understood the nature of this. He was able to identify good from evil and identify this as part of the evil column.
Should they go back in a time machine? Impossible question. You're there. Do you argue and say, guys, we cannot put this declaration together unless it includes slavery? Do you?
I think every one of us would probably like to imagine that that is what we would say. Slavery is so abhorrent, and we're able to see that today. And so I think most of us would like to believe that if we were there, we would say, okay, let's rally around this.
So let me make a real life situation. Let's say for some reason, you know, Washington implodes and you're not there, but a lot of the representatives, you know, our government is gone. We have to start over and we have to fight against an outside force. And we've got 40 states and 10 of them will not go for, hey, a pro-life declaration. We are going to, all people are created equal and endowed by their creator, and we have to protect life, and we believe life begins at conception or whatever, and you got 10 states that don't do it. It's the same kind of situation. Would you see a reason to compromise on that principle to be able to gather a free country and take care of it later, you would hope?
Yes, I believe I would, which is illustrative here, especially if we couldn't survive without those states unwilling to go along with it. And that, I think, was quite arguably the case at the time of the Revolution. These were 13 colonies. They understood that unless they were all united, they couldn't survive, not militarily, not economically. And those two things were interrelated.
And you couldn't get more pro-life than you are.
That's correct. And
if you couldn't survive and cobble this country back together because you were pro-life and some states were not, you would still say, okay, well, let's work towards that.
That's exactly right. And so this is one of the reasons I tell the story about Jefferson's attempts to get rid of slavery in this book, in our Lost Declaration. I think it's important for us to understand the historical context in which he operated.
Back with Mike Lee in just a second. The book is on sale right now. Buy a copy for yourself. Buy a copy for your children and your grandchildren. Make sure you have a hard copy of this. I think it's a really important book. Our Lost Declaration, America's Fight Against Tyranny, from King George to the Deep State. Available now everywhere.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hey, it's Glenn, and if you like what you hear on the program, you should check out Pat Gray Unleashed. His podcast is available wherever you download your favorite podcast.
From the less than frozen tundra, in fact, mostly warm and soggy tundra of Las Colinas, Texas, Glenn Beck prognosticates the NFL draft.
We've given Glenn a selection of 20 players from the NFL draft, and he is going to try
20?
To place them. Yeah, so he says,
I've already narrowed it down.
It's going pretty deep.
Yeah.
Going pretty deep.
I'll tell you
who
doesn't have a chance today. Okay.
Don't have a chance to be drafted.
Don't have a chance of being drafted. They will spend their lives in obscurity.
Now that you do know there's more picks past 10. So you're only picking the top 10. They could get picked at number 11, for example.
They could go play cute little football someplace. These people are over. Nick Bosa.
He's over. He's over.
Done.
Okay.
Dwayne Haskins.
Done.
Done. Christian Wilkinson. He might have a chance. Cleon Farrell.
Okay.
Done.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy. Quinnen
Williams.
Done. Done. Off.
Not going to get
dead
picked.
To me. Byron Coward.
Okay.
Coward. Mm-hmm. Done. Mm-hmm. Devin White.
No.
And are we going to hear the reasoning?
There's a chance. There's
behind
a chance.
This?
I'm only judging by pictures, weight, and height.
Okay. That's up to you. You could have had knowledge and watched football like every other male in America for the
and
last
Josh
50
Allen.
Years.
Done.
Yeah,
done.
Josh Allen's
he's
done.
A clown.
For sure.
Yeah,
for
he's
sure.
a clown.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you have that. Those are the people you've eliminated?
I've eliminated. I've eliminated more than that, but I've got my picks.
Okay, so should we do this? With the first pick of the 2019 Glenn Beck NFL Draft, the Arizona Cardinals select...
No.
That's how the...
What do you mean?
This is how the draft works. We say that little thing
You'll
over and
over
again.
You'll get all 10 of them filled in, but I fill them in differently.
So what are you doing, like a countdown?
No, I'm not doing a countdown. I'm going to start with number 8.
Like you're starting with the 8th pick of the draft.
Yes.
Okay.
Detroit Lions.
All right.
Okay.
Here we go.
All right.
The problem with that is, and I know you know this, the 8th pick of the draft could be gone if you start at 8. Because number 1 could pick 8.
No.
No.
Number 1 is not going to pick 8. Number 1 is going to pick
1.
Number 1.
I see.
Okay.
Okay.
Number 8 is Ed Oliver. He will be going to the Lions. Ed Oliver. He's 6'3", 290 pounds. He's from Houston. Mm-hmm. Now, I thought...
Now, why?
I thought for a while that he could go to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers because he's been playing in severe heat in Houston. Okay?
Okay.
And, so. And he's been playing in an open stadium, I think, probably, in Houston.
Uh-huh.
And so
Probably? You're not sure
about
sure.
that. But the team that he plays for in Houston, they know him as a big, tough guy that can run around in sweaty and not pass out in a really hot, sweaty day.
So you're saying this is essentially a humidity pick by the Detroit Lions?
No. I'm not sending him to Tampa Bay.
Okay.
I almost picked him for number 5.
Okay.
Because of the humidity thing.
But instead he's going to number 8, the Detroit Lions.
You got to look at him. Now look at his picture.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
I see that.
He looks like somebody just hit him in the face with a shovel. Like He looks like what the
Okay. Well, he's got a surprised look on his face.
Right.
Yes.
Stepped on a rake.
Yeah.
Boom!
What the?
That's what he looks in this.
Okay. Now I should note to you here, Glenn, that the thing you're looking at is a photograph, which is a moment in time of one particular fraction of a second.
That's all I got to go on.
He doesn't always look like he has a surprised look on his face.
That's all I got to go on.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
So, if you want to take away his surprised reaction, then he goes to Tampa.
But he's surprised because he's going cold weather.
No.
He's going to Detroit.
No.
Everyone
who lives in Detroit opens their door every day and goes, what the? When they realize they're in Detroit.
Okay.
So, number 8 to Detroit, Ed Oliver.
All right.
Hard to argue with that logic.
Wow.
It is.
This is Detroit is okay. All right. Detroit gets Ed Oliver. Now we go to the next pick, which is not 9 as you might expect, but another pick on the board.
Well, no, this one, TJ Hockenson. You know who he is?
We do. Yes.
Okay, 6'5", 245 pounds. Mhm. He's going to the Seattle SuperSonics, which is on another board.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's going to the Seattle SuperSonics.
Wait, wait, board because it's on a basketball board.
And also,
I don't think
team
they don't exist,
anymore.
They're now the Oklahoma City Thunder, right?
Yes.
Seattle doesn't have a basketball team anymore?
No, they do not.
No, they do not.
These damn Marxists.
And they do have a football team, but they're not drafting in the top 10.
So the SuperSonics are over.
Yes, they've been over for a long time. Yes.
Ha!
So they're going to be...
Who knew?
That pick is going to be surprised when he goes there and nobody's playing football or basketball.
Well, he'll win.
You know, so.
Yeah. Because nobody will be playing against him. All right. 6'5", 254 pounds from Wyoming.
Mm-hmm.
What?
I was going to ask what team we're drafting. What position in the top 10 are we drafting?
I'm telling you in a minute.
Oh, okay.
Okay. First, let me introduce Carl Ganderson. You know Carl?
Carl Ganderson?
Ganderson. 6'5", yes. From Wyoming, 254 pounds.
I'm not familiar with Carl, frankly. Okay. Are you?
Yes, I am familiar with Carl. It's an interesting pick for which team?
I'm gonna pick him for Denver, number 10.
Okay.
Okay, he's going to Denver. And the reason why, if you look at this picture, he looks like kind of one of those go west young men statues, you know?
Is that because he's holding his football out in front of him?
Might be, but look at his eyes. He's like, I'm determined. I'm gonna go someplace where it's west.
Mm-hmm.
So he is going to the Denver Broncos.
Okay, so far we have the 8th pick in the draft is Ed Oliver, and the 10th pick is Carl Ganderson.
I wouldn't be surprised, though, if Denver was actually east of Laramie.
But that's a whole other...
that's a whole different story.
Well, I'm just saying.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
I know.
So here we go. Here we go. From Alabama, 6'5", 301 pound, Jonah Williams.
Mm.
You know Jonah?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Jonah. That guy looks like...
Mm-hmm.
I think he's going to the Oakland Raiders.
The Oakland Raiders at number 4.
Yeah, because he looks kind of pissed off.
He looks like
a guy who could live in Oakland and be like, "What? I'm going to tear these people limb from limb." And and you have to, if you're going to live in Oakland, that's the way you have to look.
All right. Okay. He looks like he's from Game of Thrones, kind of.
Yeah,
he
does.
Could be right in, by the way, he's from California.
He could play for the Kings.
There you go. Oakland Raiders select at number 4, Jonah Williams. For some reason, the Arizona Cardinals at 1 still have not decided to make their pick, which is a controversial move here in this draft.
Okay, I do have, hang on, I've lost Mr. Hunk-a-Lot. Hang on. Where is he? I've got one for San Francisco. He's really a good-looking guy.
Okay.
And here he is, Drew Locke from Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
Quarterback.
In this picture, he kind of looks like Tom Cruise.
He does. San Francisco.
They're going to, like, they'll love him there.
They'll love him in San Francisco.
Number 2 right. pick,
wow.
Drew Locke going to San Francisco.
Drew Locke at number 2.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. For San Francisco. So we now have 2... 4, 8, and 10 have been selected here in the Glenn Beck 2019 NFL Draft.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers, number 5.
Mm.
Okay.
The mothership of this program.
Yes.
It's a big pick.
Yes.
People on the edge of their seats right now.
At 6'2", 305 pounds from Kentucky.
It's a big fella.
Bunchy Stallings.
All right, Bunchy.
Bunchy has a good name.
It's a good name.
That's He's a good name. He's from game. Kentucky. He looks friendly. He looks like a guy who'd be like, come on, Tampa's fun.
Yeah, he does. He looks like he's having a good time in that picture. I agree.
For good times, he's going to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Bunchy Stallings at number 5. Okay, we still have the 1, 3, 6, 7, and 9 picks to go. Glenn, the next selection.
That's getting tough now. It's getting tough because I'm kind of down to just a bunch of people that are like, eh.
Based on their photos, they're just... Nah.
You were very excited about
Christian
Bunchy,
Christian Wilkins.
Christian Wilkins.
Clemson. You know him?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
He looks like a homeless guy.
What?
Why?
Well, in that picture.
Why? Yeah, he looks like a homeless guy in this picture. He's got a beard and it's kind of unkempt. And he looks like a guy who's like, hey, dude, you got some money? Let me wash your windshield.
I don't think that that's
New
accurate,
York
but he
Jets.
Just seems to have
He's
his mouth open,
York.
And you're judging it completely.
He's going to New York.
To wash windshields?
Yes.
Or,
no, he's going to play for the...
That's, he's going to play for the...
Giants and Jets. There's two teams, so he's selected now. This guy goes to New York, but he doesn't know which New York team it is. This is a good general manager you have
right
here.
All right, I'm going to pick Jawan Taylor.
Jawan Taylor, okay.
From Florida.
Well, wait a minute. Don't you want to...
I'm gonna
decide where Christian Wilkins is going.
They both go to 3 and 6. They can work it out between themselves. No, which one they go to?
They don't get to work it out. You have to pick them.
Yeah,
this is how this works.
I'm gonna let them decide.
You can't do that. You have to select which one is which. 3 and 6. Juwan Taylor and Christian Wilkins.
I don't know. The Jets just seem more like New York. The Giants seem more like a knockoff kind of girly team. So I'm going to put Jaween for the Jets and Christian Wilkins because he looks happy but homeless. We'll give him to the Giants. But I say those two are interchangeable. They could pick. No. It could go to 6 or 3. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, again,
maybe there will be a trade. Maybe this is the way of Glenn signaling there will be a trade made there between the Giants and Jets, which has a good 0% chance of happening.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we still have the 7 and 9 picks to go, and then the number one overall in the 2019 Glenn Beck.
Have
NFL
I
draft.
Selected the number one, the one that everybody is like, oh,
not yet?
He's
not
one.
Yet. No, you have, no, not. You have not. No. You did discount one of the top three, though. In fact, a couple of the top three.
Yeah, I will say the most excited team here.
They're in the pile of discounted.
Most excited
is it
team
Clellan?
Here.
Farrell?
Quinnen? No.
Quinnen Williams is.
Quinnen Williams.
But you can't put him back in now.
Nick Bosa. But you've
already
discounted
both of them. I want to take a look at him.
You can't choose him now. You've already discounted them. We need to take a break. We need to do our. We got three more
picks. All right, well, I have the number 9 pick and the number 1 pick to go.
Yes.
Who's it going to be? Only I know. We'll do that. Okay, I'm going to dismiss Kyler Murray because he's 5'10 from Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm. And you're dismissing
Nobody's 5'10 and 195 pounds in the NFL.
There have been people who have made this point, actually.
Mm. Actually, there are a few.
There are a few, but...
There's a few, and there have been a few. But, I mean, Kyler Murray.
But you've discounted him, so who's next? Can we get the next three picks, please?
Well, I still had him in my go pile, but I was thinking about discounting him. Daniel Jones. He's from Duke. You know who Daniel Jones is?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We do.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put him up in the Buffalo Bills because he just looks like an eater.
He's got
his tongue out, and he's like, that looks delicious.
Again, Glenn, because in this photo, he has his tongue out. Does not mean he walks around all the time with his tongue out.
He likes buffalo wings.
Okay.
They make great buffalo wings. It's the home of buffalo wings. I'm going to put Daniel Jones up there.
Intriguing pick from Buffalo. We still have number 7. Do you want to do number 7 first and end on number 1?
Number 7. Oh, the Jaguars?
Yeah.
That's not even a team.
It actually is. Yep. It's a team in Jacksonville.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to give it to Kyler Murray because he's a fast runner. He's got to be a runner. It's that small.
Now,
Murray goes number 7.
Why would Jacksonville need a runner, per se, would you think?
Because Jaguars are like cheetahs. They're fast.
Okay. Well, that's more logic than I thought was attached to that.
Okay. All right. So on
one
the board
more pick.
Still.
On
the number still. 1 pick. Going
I
to
still
the
have
Arizona
Josh
Cardinals.
Allen. Byron Coward. I think those two are still out. Quinnen Williams. He looks like a football player. Devin White.
Now you've already eliminated Quinnen Williams. And then we gave you too much information on
you
that.
Did, for you did, so I hate to get rid of him.
Mm-hmm. You already had him. You got rid of him. That's why we brought it up.
Okay.
The number one pick.
Okay, number one pick. All right. Number one pick. Didn't I get rid of Nick Bosa, right?
Yes,
yeah,
Bosa, you did.
I got rid of him. He's dead to me. Now, Andre Dillard and Devin White.
Uh-huh.
Now, I'm putting Cleon Farrell back in because I have some information that he is good at something.
I bet he is.
But if you look at them, they all look happy.
They do.
Cleon does not look... He looks like he's faking it. Okay? But if you look at Andre Dillard and Devin White, they look sincerely happy.
That's nice that you're judging them that way. I like that.
Mm-hmm. But no one wants to play football in 1,000 degrees.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. That's true. It's very hot in Tampa. And the new stadium's not quite ready.
So I'm getting rid of Andrew Dillard.
We're doing Arizona, though, now.
Oh, Arizona. That's right. Well, they do have an indoor stadium.
They have an indoor stadium?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm going Devin White. Because he looks the happiest.
All right, Devin
White.
And
he's like, hey, I just picked number 1.
There you go.
There it is.
So let's give you the rundown here. Arizona Cardinals select Devin White. San Francisco 49ers go QB with Drew Locke at 2. New York Jets, Jawan Taylor at 3. Oakland Raiders.
Wait. You didn't tell me that San Francisco needed a quarterback?
They don't.
They don't. But they selected a second one for some reason.
Yeah. He's a quarterback.
He is a quarterback.
Oh, he was white. I wanted to see if there was a chance that he was. Do they draft for owners?
Oh, that's right.
Because Cory Booker. I think the only white people are owners.
They don't draft owners.
We're told all the time that this is essentially slavery these players.
But Drew Luck cannot be an owner of the San Francisco 49ers.
He can't be.
No, he cannot.
They'll never draft him for that.
No. Oakland Raiders at 4 go Jonah Williams. At 5, the Tampa Bay Bucks with an interesting selection of Bunchy Stallings. At 5. At 6, the Giants select Christian Wilkins.
Mm-hmm. Or Jawan Taylor.
No, you don't get your oars. We'll give you credit if they switch. If they trade those two picks, we'll give you credit. Jacksonville Jaguars select Kyler Murray. They're at number seven, which is kind of a surprise.
Yeah, that would be a surprise.
Detroit Lions Ed Oliver at 8.
Yeah, I almost cut him out. I thought Kyler, I don't think he's really a football player.
Do you think we're fooling you? Number 9, Daniel Jones goes to the Buffalo Bills. They've got a good quarterback situation there now, too. Mm-hmm. And Denver Broncos select Carl Ganderson at number 10. So here's what it can we now, these are locked in place
now?
Interesting selections here. San Francisco, as we mentioned, has a very highly paid quarterback. Yeah. And for them to select someone at number 2 that is a quarterback would be very surprising.
Let me tell you, if that happens, whoever the quarterback is for the 49ers, better watch your back. Because they're offing you because you are too expensive.
Mm. Okay. Now, it is believed that Kyler Murray, the quarterback.
The one that you discounted because he's 5'10 and 190.
Will be the number one pick in the draft.
Why would you do that? Is he a fast runner?
He's also fast.
He can throw.
Now, Jacksonville just signed a giant quarterback contract with Nick Foles at 7, so it would be surprising to see them draft another quarterback there.
Kind of, yeah.
But this is information that would have been helpful. This all would have been information that would have been
helpful.
You know, if you would have told me their positions and what the teams needed, maybe I could have helped you out a little bit more.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.